welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, this is Jessica at Syosset Library, Turn the Page, and I am proud to welcome our guest for today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Joseph Finder. I'm the author of a number of New York Times bestselling thrillers. The most recent one is called House on Fire, which comes out on Tuesday, the 21st. And it is a thriller starring my main continuing character, Nick Heller. And happy to tell you more about it.
This is the fourth Nick Heller fourth book in your series. Am I correct?
Exactly.
When did you start writing about Nick? And what kind of gave you, how did you start building his character? Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, I wanted to write I got a lot of emails from my readers asking if the characters that they read about were going to be continuing. People really like to see continuing characters. And I thought a lot about what kind of character I wanted to do. And I thought about some of the successful series characters that have been out there. And I wanted him to not be too much like the others. So I thought about Jack Reacher, for example, who's a great character. And Jack Reacher's kind of a drifter. And I wanted Nick to be fixed in one place. I wanted Nick to have a family and colleagues, and I also wanted him to have military background, so I made him a special forces vet. So in order to create the Nick character, I spent a lot of time talking to guys who'd been in the special forces to get a sense of what that life was like, what they were like. And I also talked to private investigators, because Nick goes private with the first book Vanished in the series. He becomes a private investigator, or I call him a private spy, actually, because he does operations like a spy, not just investigations. So I created Nick sort of from real life characters, but he is his own kind of thing.
I thought it was really cool. And, you know, just his whole character in general, I thought it was, he was really cool. He was very likable. I thought he was very relatable.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you for writing him. And this book talks about something extremely current and very sad. It delves into the opioid crisis. Which is affecting so many populations, so many people.
Mm-hmm.
This particular book, Nick is hired by a young woman who is descended or an heiress, I guess mm-hmm. you could say, from a family that is involved in producing an opioid.
Right. Yeah, and we've read a lot about the opioid crisis and the fact that almost 500,000 Americans have died from an overdose of opioids. We've read a lot about these stories, and I wanted to delve into a part of it that we hadn't read about, which is what is it like? What would it be like to be a member of a family that's gotten rich off of opioids? And in other words, they bear responsibility for the opioid epidemic. What is it like? So, I talked to people who had worked for pharmaceutical companies. I did my research, but I didn't actually talk to members of any of the families, like the Sackler families, they founded Purdue Pharma. I didn't talk to them because I wanted to sort of create my own family. And I created a family of five kids. And I come from a family of five kids, although we were not wealthy. But I think that the family dynamics are similar among large families. So I sort of created the family characters out of my own family background.
But each of the children in this family, they were very distinct, very different, and very believable. And I think that that was a real success on your part. I don't want to go too much into everybody's role in the family, because I would like the readers to, you know, get that themselves. But you really had a very well balanced and very organic feel to each child and exactly what part they had within the family.
Yeah. I did not want them to all be the same. I wanted them to be very different, the way it would happen in any kind of a large family. And they all have different attitudes toward their money and the way they spend it and that sort of thing. So yeah, there are very different characters, and it was a lot of fun, I have to say, to write those characters.
So Nick is hired by one of the children.
Right.
She knows what her family has made their money off of, and she seems mm-hmm. to almost be like the rebel activist child. I know I said I wasn't exactly going to go too much into this, but this is the premise of this story.
Exactly, right.
And she hires
the rebel.
Yes, she's the rebel, and she hires Nick for what purpose?
Well, she, again, you're right, she's the rebel, and she hires Nick to dig into the family's guilt, the family's role in selling this opioid drug to doctors while concealing how dangerously addictive it was. So she's really wanting Nick to sort of expose her family's role in the opioid epidemic. And Nick hears that. In fact, they meet it at a funeral of his friend Sean, who saved his life.
Right. We haven't even gotten to Sean yet, who's really the catalyst here. So
it's the catalyst. Yeah. So at this funeral, Nick is approached by this woman, Suki, who's the daughter of the guy who founded this company, and asked if he would dig into it, if he's willing to sort of dig up evidence that the family knew how addictive it was. And Nick says yes immediately because he's angry about what happened to Sean.
I think that also Nick has such a great relationship to Sean's family. He was almost like a surrogate father to Sean's older son. You could really feel the pain and just, you know, how he really wants to help this young boy understand something that's impossible to understand.
Right, exactly. You take a young kid whose father has just died and he doesn't get why it happened. He sort of blames his father. And Nick is trying to tell this boy that it's not the father's fault, that he was powerless in the face of this powerful drug. And this is we know about this story, and this has been repeated 500,000 times in this country, that how powerless people are to the power of opioids.
And I think it's very difficult for a young child to understand addiction.
Yeah, it really is. I talked to a child psychiatrist to get a sense of what that grieving process would be like, what this kid would be like. I wanted to get that as real as possible. And it turned out to help illuminate a side to Nick that we haven't seen before. This sort of quasi-paternal aspect to Nick. He doesn't have any kids, but he's the godfather to this kid, and he acts like a surrogate father. And I think we see a vulnerable side to Nick that we hadn't seen before.
It was really heartbreaking, and well done. So Nick is solicited by this young woman at the funeral, right after the funeral of Sean.
Right.
And she wants him to dig into her family's, I guess, skeletons in their closet.
Yep, exactly.
And one of the things I actually just kind of pulled out, which I thought was interesting, you know, when they're talking about studies that have been on drugs that certain drugs that were not released because they would reflect poorly on either the company or, you know, anything, the people prescribing it itself. Paxil was considered ineffective. And it was something that the companies knew.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, the more I dug into this stuff, the more I found, the more ridiculous stuff I found, where clinical trials were buried and companies, you know, Paxil was a huge moneymaker. The company wanted to sort of bury the fact that it was ineffective, and they were able to do that for years.
Which is just sad, because so many people really look to antidepressants to, you know, get them where they need to be so they can function and work and be there for their family. You know, depression is another very difficult thing to understand and explain. But you can't mess around. You can't mess around with it. You know, it's like you can't give somebody who can't walk a crutch that's broken. They're not going to be able to get anywhere.
Yeah, and it's sort of outrageous that the company was able to get away with it for as long as they did.
Absolutely. So so the Nick, when he is introduced to this family, he is introduced at a party for the father, who has his, she's sort of considered the trophy wife. The children don't trust her. Apparently he met her on, was it like a Russian brides type site?
Website.
but she seems to not be what you would expect. From that type of person. She certainly throws the reader, I think, for a loop, which was refreshing.
Yeah, because it's a cliche to have the trophy wife who's just sort of a bimbo.
Yes.
I wanted her to be sort of smarter and, you know, more aware of what's going on than anyone would possibly suspect. And she sort of is a close observer of the family. And when Nick is able to finally, you know, get in touch with her, she sheds a lot of light on who is who in the family, because he's really trying to infiltrate the family.
Right.
And she turns out to be important in that operation.
Well, I guess in a way she's kind of infiltrated the family in her own way.
Exactly right. Well put. Exactly.
I mean, you know, she's beautiful and she's young, but she, as you said, she's also smart, and she's not the bimbo trophy wife. I mean, she's used her beauty, obviously, and her smarts to sort of become part of this family that's obviously going to take care of her financially. You know, so she has gotten something out of them as well. So of course, you know, she knows she knows that she's probably going to be met with lack of trust. And she sort of subdued her voice and become an observer. So she was, you know, that's valuable to Nick's purpose.
Exactly. And Nick, you know, it's a delicate operation infiltrating the family, because he has to be careful not to arouse their suspicions. And, you know, he needs allies. And she turns out to be an ally in his quest.
And I think, like, considering that when he goes to infiltrate this family, he's supposed to be, her name is Susan, but they call her Suki, the activist sister, her boyfriend. And apparently her boyfriends have not been as clean cut as he seems to be presenting. He says that he's he works for, you know, like a legitimate company. And so automatically, either they'll think, wow, you know, Suki is finally getting serious about relationships, or they're going to think, who is this guy and why is our sister with him and what does he want with us? So that is very delicate.
Yeah. And then the, you know, it's important that the father's suspicions not be too aroused. But the father sort of takes to him in a certain way, likes him, but is automatically suspicious of him at the same time.
Just like a father would be.
Yeah, like a father would be. I mean, why are you here? What do you want? Are you just trying to get her money, et cetera? So that's the dynamic, which Nick has to work with in order to infiltrate.
And then when he does, when he initially meets them, there's the surprise that he meets somebody from his past who is also trying to infiltrate this family.
Right. He's shocked by this. And this is a person from his past. This is a woman that he used to go out with. And Nick feels he feels very torn seeing her again. He's glad to see her, but he also feels guilty about the way they broke up. And that turns out to be a subplot in the story as well.
I thought she was really interesting. So her name was Maggie. And how did they know each other in the past? I mean, they obviously dated, but there was more to it than that. They have a military history together.
Yeah. So after Nick came back from Afghanistan, he started working for the Defense Department in intelligence as a spy, you might call him. And he is assigned to work on an operation with this woman, Maggie, who turns out to, you know, she seems very serious, and he doesn't quite get her at first. And she takes to him, and they eventually start going out. And I don't want to reveal too much about her backstory, but he sort of gets involved and in something that happened to her. And it turns out to be a source of tension between the two of them.
I think he definitely thinks what he's doing is the noble and right thing to do, but he doesn't understand, I guess, what her boundaries are in this situation.
Right. Yeah, this is a side to Nick that we haven't seen in other Nick Heller books. So basically, Nick is the sort of guy who wants to sort of save everybody and help everybody, even if they don't necessarily want to be helped. And Nick basically finds he's gone too far. And this is sort of an aspect to Nick that I wanted to reveal in the book. Basically, I don't want Nick Heller to be a superhuman character. He is human. He has flaws. He makes mistakes. And when he gets into a fight, he gets hurt. He's human. And I wanted that to be revealed in his relationship with Maggie. I sort of felt that it sort of enriches Nick and his backstory. It gets us to understand him more.
So as you're writing him, do you have an idea in your head as to what parts of him will be revealed in what parts of the series, or do they sort of arise as the story comes about?
Yeah, I mean, so on the one hand, each of the Nick Heller books you can pick up separately. You don't have to read them in any kind of order. And yet with each one of the books, I sort of delve deeper and deeper into him. And I knew I wanted to make him human and vulnerable. I didn't know how I was going to reveal him. That is, as I was writing the book, it occurred to me, you know what? What if we see an aspect to Nick right now that we sort of see that he basically tries too hard to help people even when they don't want to be helped, which can be offensive to some people. And so basically I hadn't planned on this. It just sort of came as I was writing it. I sort of thought, what if there was a backstory that's a complicated one between the two of them? It's not just that they were lovers, but there's something more. There's a whole sense of guilt that Nick feels.
I really liked that because I feel like it's a thing that a lot of people do who are compelled to help.
Yep.
And I don't think even after the fact, some of them realize, if not in the future, right away, exactly why some help is not what what the person needs.
Exactly right.
And there's many different ways to help people. So, but getting back to this family, so the title, House on Fire,
mm-hmm.
where did that arise?
Well, Nick is infiltrating a family that, if he is successful, he's going to bring them down. And it turns out that this is also not only a family that is on the verge of being brought down, but they're also experiencing a lot of guilt. And this is sort of based in reality, where some of these companies, especially the Purdue Pharma, the founder of that company, the Sacklers, became philanthropists, known as philanthropists, gave a lot of money to museums and schools and universities, et cetera, until it came out what the company's role was in perpetrating the opioid epidemic. And then the Sackler family became sort of widely reviled for their role. And I found that really interesting. I wanted to sort of think, what would it be like to be a member of a wealthy family that's gotten rich off of opioids and knows that they're responsible for it, and people are beginning to hate them for their role in it? What would that be like? How would that tear the family apart? So this was sort of a house on fire, the family.
That's what I got out of it, too. And you described what I read perfectly.
Thank you.
So will there be another Nick Heller book? I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I was on tour for my last book, Judgment, which is a standalone, so many people came up to me and said, when do I get another Nick Heller book? So I realized there is a demand out there. What I've been doing is alternating standalones with the Nick Heller series books. The next book I'm writing is a standalone, but the one after that is going to be a Nick Heller.
Thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Thanks for having me on.
And I am going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.